Interesting news out of the NBA. We got Woj dropping a bomb on Woj. We'll get to that coming up in the final hour.
Woj on Woj bomb.
We got a Woj on Woj bomb. But we got more important things to tackle in the short term, and that is college football, baby. Josh Pate, one of our favorites. Love chatting with him every single week. You can catch him live on YouTube every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time. The Josh Pate College Football Show at Josh Pate CFB on Twitter. Go give him a follow and check the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Portland, Oregon got a shout out on the show last night.
Yeah, it did. So did Lacey Washington.
Lacey Washington. Look at that. Just booming in the Northwest. Love to hear it. Josh, I would like to start with an apology. I have to admit, I questioned Columbia, South Carolina as the destination last week. I questioned it. I wondered why, of all the places, not a great slate, why of all the places that's where you're going to go? And I am going to start the interview with an apology. You were right. I was wrong. Awesome call. That game was chaos, craziness, everything that we love about the sport of college football. So kudos to you.
Okay, well, let me first say I do not accept because you should know better. So live and learn.
Okay.
And now this automatically means that since we're going to Norman this Saturday night, forget about what everyone says. Forget about how orange drunk people are off watching Tennessee so far. Somehow, some way, Oklahoma's got this a one possession game midway through the fourth quarter. It doesn't even matter how it happens. I'm not even interested with how it happens. It's just got
to
happen.
It's got to happen. Well, I saw that you're going to Norman. You've never been to, at least on the tour, you've never been to a game in Norman, Oklahoma. I do want to get to that game, but I'm curious to ask you, because you have been in Oklahoma many a times, and I don't know if I've ever heard you answer this. You chased tornadoes in the offseason. How did that happen? And how did that start? And am I crazy for wanting to see a tornado in person?
It depends on what you're made of. 99% of people would be crazy.
Okay.
I have had two instances when we've been storm chasing where I've had a friend who says, I just want to tag along. I had one instance, we were actually down in central Georgia, nighttime, nocturnal chasing, which normally means something much different than it means in the weather community. And so we are on a 13th Street Viaduct in Columbus, Georgia. There is what ended up being an EF2 tornado moving south-southwest to north-northeast, coming over the Chattahoochee River towards us. The guy who claimed he wanted to go see a tornado is in the passenger seat freaking out.
Yeah.
It is too late for us to go anywhere. He said, we got to go somewhere. I said, we are where we were going to go. This is where we're trying to get. And so from that night on, I swore, I have got to more thoroughly vet these people. So I would have to put you through a lengthy, like virtual reality process to see how you handle it. But yeah, I've loved atmospheric science since I was a kid. It's what I'd do if I didn't do college football. And so it's perfect because my schedule is in the fall, it's taking up college football, which means the spring is a little more maneuverable. And several times this year already in the spring, several times we were in Oklahoma, went to Kansas, had a chase in Illinois, Iowa. So yeah, I'm all over the place in the spring.
Well, I grew up in Portland, and so we're not as familiar with tornadoes and twisters, but having watched Twister a million times, more than I can count with Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt, I do wish you would have turned to your friend in the back seat and just leaned in and said, we're in the suck zone, and just made him nervous.
Well, what's fun is not doing that to friends. What's fun is doing that to random people at gas stations in Oklahoma. That's what's really fun.
That can mean every different thing. I mean, there might be a whole other conversation there on what that means. But college football slate is good. It's decent this week, and there's some good games. You're going to Norman. I'm excited for that one. It pains me to say this because, you know, in the gambling world, you don't want to agree with everybody. I agreed with your Michigan-USC stuff, and we'll get to that. The Clemson-Florida State ACC news came out. We have Oregon State, Washington State fans up here. Cougs are riding high after beating the Huskies. Everybody's holding out hope, the best optimism possible. The ACC crumbling could mean a great deal for the Pac-12. What are we to make of this Clemson-Florida State development with the ACC? Do you think they ultimately will reach an agreement and stay as a conference dropping this lawsuit?
Well, what's weird is, as I read it, and granted I did not read the whole thing, but as I read it, broad strokes, it seems like what they proposed before they got into this mess, because I distinctly recall a couple of them, namely Clemson and Florida State, saying, if you'll just pay us more than everyone else gets, we won't have to go anywhere. And then they said no. And then they said, well, we're going somewhere. And then it got entangled. And now someone's come and said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we just pay you more than everyone else so you can stay? And they're like, oh, that's interesting. So that's the dumbed-down version that lawyers don't want you to realize, so they're worth their time. But that's the dumbed-down version of what's going on here. And I know it's dumbed-down because even I can understand it. And I would guess, since they've circled all the way back around to that they will find some kind of mutual conclusion here that at least suits everyone. But I've always wondered, like, if you're Wake Forest, if you're Boston College, what leverage do you really have at the end of the day? The only thing you have is that grant of rights. That's the only thing standing between you and irrelevance, because all the big boys would leave you. So even though technically in the moment you've got a piece of paper that binds them, a motivated party, especially with private equity entering the equation, was going to find a way to get out eventually. So it is in your best interest, even though you technically don't have to do it right now, to go ahead and do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we were left wondering last night, like, if the Pac-12 would have done this 5 years ago with their big dogs in the conference before they wanted to leave, would we still be in existence as the original Pac-12? And maybe it would still exist. Josh Pate is our guest. Josh Pate, CFB on Twitter. Go follow him Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, live show on YouTube, 5 o'clock our time, and check the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. On that note, did have a Beaver fan, you know, mention in the last segment, like, hey, can you guys throw a question on Oregon State at Josh? You know, a lot of these national shows will talk about big games and big matchups and all big teams, but we don't hear a lot of conversation on Oregon State and Washington State, some of the smaller schools. And I know last week we had you on Wednesday, and I think the news broke on the Pac-12 going and getting Mountain West schools later that night or sometime Thursday, because I know you talked about it on the show last week. But just for our Beaver and Cougar fans, like, what did you make of that move, and what's the next viable step for them, especially now knowing there's a pretty decent chance maybe that the ACC sticks together?
Well, that was a Ross Dellinger report, and I'm sitting there reading it, and then I'm obviously being familiar with how they have to have at least 8 teams, and I saw him talking about how tangled it was that they can't just go add UNLV. So we were in a production meeting, and we're sitting around a table saying, man, what does this mean? What does this mean? I said, screw this. I called Dellinger, put him on speaker, and said, what do you mean by all this?
What does it mean?
So he lays out he lays out the whole situation, and it's on record, off record stuff. But basically, it's they're going to have to take Nevada if they take UNLV as it stands now, and I don't think anyone wants anything to do with Nevada for whatever reason. So I don't know. I think there are some viable brands out there. Here's what you have to shake from your mind, okay? You can't be thinking, who can we go get that makes us equal to what we used to be or equal to the Big Ten or the SEC? You're not going to be that overnight. You may just not be that. Just put your blinders on. Focus on creating the most sustainable and viable path forward. I would value regionality, but I know that out west it's a little harder to do than in the Midwest or the South, because there aren't as many teams in close proximity. But just run your race and detach yourself from the horrific decision-making of the past that got you where you are, and it'll take care of itself. It will work itself out, not in 12 or 24 or 36 months, but it'll work itself out in the long run.
Oregon took care of Oregon State in the Civil War, didn't feel the same, but they looked mighty good. You talked about on our show and nationally, you've talked about Oregon having a slow start, and there's no preseason in college, and some of these teams need a buildup. Their offensive line played their best game of the year. They kept the same group. What did you make of what you saw from Oregon? Dylan Gabriel was awesome again. What did you make of the Ducks?
Yeah, it was very encouraging to see what their offensive line did. And as I told you guys last week, there are some teams, like Michigan, that struggle early in the year, and it just means they've got a much lower ceiling than in years past or last year. That is not the case with Oregon. Oregon actually may have a higher ceiling than they had last year. But that's not always a guarantee that someone's going to come out of the gate hot. Sometimes you come out of the gate and you're dizzy and you're stumbling and you got to get your feet under you. Or to use aviation terms, you just need a little bit longer runway. Georgia killed Clemson in week one. They didn't need a long runway. Oregon barely survived Idaho and Boise. They did need a longer runway. But that doesn't mean if those teams meet in the second round of the playoff that it'll look like that. It does mean to me, though, that there was a reality check there. And of course, the offensive line injury didn't help, but it may have helped them in the aggregate that they got some things figured out. They had to cross train some guys and whatnot. I still think the ceiling's every bit as high for that team as people like me and others thought in the preseason. It's just that sometimes it doesn't always start the way you want it to. The painting's not always finished 5 minutes into the whatever the process of making a painting is. So I still think very highly, and I'm still every bit as high on their potential.
Yeah, the model snapped back last week or last night as well. I saw that up for the performance this weekend. Josh Pate is our guest. Josh Pate, CFB on Twitter. Go give him a follow, the Josh Pate College Football Show. What's the conversation on Monday if USC wins in Ann Arbor this weekend?
Ooh, that's the flag plant. That is a bigger win than the LSU game. And also, I think that there would be some uncomfortable conversations at Michigan, because that is a harsh snapback to reality, yeah, of having won a title last year, and you had convinced yourself the Michigan brand, the Michigan culture means this and means that. Well, maybe not. But on the USC side, if they do that, I think it plants a bigger flag and makes a bigger statement because of this. They played LSU in week one, and it was ultra impressive. But the whole talk going into that was, can USC match the physicality at the line of scrimmage? And they did. The thought was they had accomplished something really big. But I just stood on the sideline in Columbia, South Carolina this past week, guys, and I watched South Carolina run for 240, and I watched South Carolina's defensive line get a hold of LSU big time. And I'm thinking to myself, this team, this LSU team, is not great on the line of scrimmage, which doesn't mean USC is not impressive. It just means they may not have faced as stiff a test as we thought they did in week one. So they are now going into a complete and total rock fight environment this Saturday. And that Michigan team is very much in wounded animal mode. And we know what happens when a desperate team with pretty good players is in wounded animal mode at home in college football. And that's the one I differ on with everyone else. I think Michigan's going to really, really ugly that game up, and I think they're going to find a way to win it, and it will be horrific looking offensively because Orgy is starting for them this week. Yeah. But what it does in a way is it sort of clears the mechanism for them. Like there's no more mirage. There's no more guessing what they are offensively. They are just a run-the-ball-straight-at-you offense, and USC's got two guys total in their defensive line too deep that are 300-plus. So they're still a little bit light there. And Michigan will look to expose that. I think it'll be ugly, lower scoring. I think somehow Michigan's going to find a way to win the game.
Yeah, I like that pick. You're going to Norman, Oklahoma hosting Tennessee. We got a Josh Heupel returning home game here. And Oklahoma's offense has looked a little clunky. They pulled away super late, almost gave that game to Tulane away. Tennessee's looked all the bit of the hype that people had about what Nico would be. I know you talked about the defense last night on your show. But so far, they have just steamrolled their way to the conversation of, are they the best team in college football? They go on the road. How underrated is the Heupel coming home part of this? Because we always assume, oh, he's coming home for revenge. And, well, there's more emotions tied to things like that sometimes than we let on. And what do you think what can Oklahoma do to slow down Tennessee in that offense?
Josh Heupel hates a lot of these people. So it is very, very much misunderstood nationally. I had to address this on last night's show, actually, because I know this. I mean, I was around Heupel in the spring. I'm close to the program. I know he has disdain for the way his exit happened at Oklahoma. But if you don't know that, you think, oh, this will be fun. He'll get his flowers coming home. He wants blood. I mean, they have circled this like it's a Super Bowl. And so there's that factor. But there's the other factor, okay? So Oklahoma has looked bad. Tennessee has looked great. College football, just like I talked about the Michigan-USC game, it teaches us the same lessons every year, and people choose to get amnesia. There are factors here that will probably make this a much more competitive game than many think it will be. Tennessee-NC State, that's the only quality competition that they faced all year. They blew them out, hung half a hundred on them. And that's how people remember the game. This game was 10-3 near the half. And then a pick six kind of shifted the game. And Nico Iamaleava had a pretty good game, made a ton of throws that probably should have been picked off early that would have violently swung it. He is an ultra supreme talent. He is a first-year starter going on his road trip for the first time against one of the best defensive play callers in college football and a defense that knows it has to win the game broke point blank. I think that the game script here has a chance early to get really, really tilted, unlike Tennessee games so far. And the way you'll know if I'm right or wrong is, do you find yourself late second quarter looking at the box score? Do you find ABC putting stats on the screen near the half that shows a big disparity in time possession? Oklahoma's run 3 times as many plays as Tennessee, and you're just thinking, wow, Tennessee hasn't had the ball. If they're doing that, they're getting Tennessee out into the deep end. That is still a game Tennessee can win. But there is a vulnerability Tennessee has. No one's been able to expose it so far. And Oklahoma may not be able to either. And if they don't get Anderson, the wide receiver, they probably won't be able to. But it is there. And that is the secondary. Tennessee lost over 180 combined starts there. They are vulnerable there. There are plays to be made there. No one has faced them with a quarterback that can do it. If Oklahoma can do that and take away some possessions and think that's the fourth quarter dogfight, too. I don't think either of those games are as simple as the favorite goes on.